This KFK podcast is presented by Bank of Colorado. There's only one Colorado and one community like Greeley, the place we've called home for years. Family-owned, community-focused banking, Bank of Colorado. There's only one. Member FDIC.
This is Katie Wingy, your host, reporter, and analyst for the Denver Nuggets, and you're listening to the whole show on 1310 KFKA.
Minutes after the hour. Welcome back into the whole show, powered by Chevron. Katie Wingy joining us now. Nuggets host and analyst at Altitude TV. Katie, I got to be honest, I'm kind of happy it's Wednesday. We still have a couple of days until we start this series because I think some recovery time is in order, not just for the players, but probably for the fans too.
Absolutely, especially, I mean, the fans are on a high. Like, let them be fans, you know what I mean? Like, we advanced second round, you beat the Lakers, all the things. Maybe they need a little bit of recovery time, but I'm hoping that they hold on to the way that they showed up for Game 5. The team, however, a little bit of a different story. I think that these days are going to be extremely valuable just for the bumps, the bruises, taking a deep breath, kind of regrouping, and coming back together again before you take on the Minnesota Timberwolves.
So, Katie, on that note, you know, thinking of Jamal Murray and KCP, who just battled through that Game 5, obviously, this is a crucial week for them just to try to get right. What are you hearing as far as the two of their, you know, their injuries at this stage? I'm assuming they'll be good to go since they were good to go the other night. Has it gotten any worse or what can you tell us?
So they didn't practice at all yesterday. I'm assuming it was a full recovery day. It was like a blackout day for the Nuggets. So they got some time away from each other to just kind of, again, take some time for their mental space, their physical space, and regroup. But I'm certain that both KCP, Jamal Murray, and Reggie Jackson, too, he's been dealing with an ankle injury as well. I'm honestly, those are the three that popped up on the injury report, but everybody at this stage is dealing with different bumps and bruises and pain in different areas. So they're playing through a lot of that. Today was the first day that they were back kind of practicing, but I would imagine it was a much less intense day, just kind of getting back into the gym, getting shots up, more player development type stuff. And then I think they'll go a little bit harder tomorrow and Friday. So with that in mind, I know every day that they're in there, I would imagine that Jamal Murray and KCP are probably erring on the side of caution of not going through as many reps and just making sure that they're taking care of their injuries to the best of their ability.
Isn't it just crazy when you look at a guy like Jamal, his best performance overall, especially stat-wise, was a game where he was questionable and maybe some of the powers that be didn't think he should play at all. That's the kind of guy he is, though. That's why he's just one of the more entertaining basketball players in the NBA.
Yeah, and I don't remember who told me this in the locker room after the game, but one of his teammates said, like, sometimes when you have an injury like that, it almost makes you focus in even more because you're trying to disassociate from the pain or whatever you're playing through, and so you're that much more locked in. And maybe that was the case with Jamal Murray. I don't really know, but what we do know about him is just his mental fortitude is next level. He has, you know, that Mamba mentality, that super competitive nature where if the game's on the line, he steps up regardless of how he's feeling, of how his body is feeling, of how he's played the rest of the game. He is, when the moments matter and when the lights come on and they're shining brightest, so is Jamal Murray.
Okay, Katie, I have a question for you. On the game winners for Jamal, which one was your favorite? And then maybe a separate question, which one was the most important? Because they're right there. How do you answer that?
Game 2 was my favorite because it was a true buzzer beater.
Yeah.
I loved it. And I think given the way that he had shot in that game, me being fortunate enough to listen into all the huddles, the way that that story kind of developed of all of his teammates at different points in time, during timeouts, during quarter breaks, going up to him being like, keep shooting, keep shooting, keep shooting. We're going to keep finding you. We need you to, you're going to make shots. Like just showing the utmost belief in Jamal Murray's capabilities. It was coaches, it was players, it was everybody really lifting him up when he wasn't making shots. And then obviously he made the most important shot to seal the deal in game 2. I would say the more important one, however, was probably game 5 because you don't want to, if you're the Nuggets, you're as banged up as you are, you don't want to get on a plane and go back to LA, and you also give the Lakers a little bit more hope. That being said, it would have gone to overtime, so the Nuggets still could have sealed the deal, but if you were to end up losing that game 5, you put yourself in a really tough position, and it's extra days that Minnesota gets to rest.
Katie, take us through that last play for the Nuggets on offense, anyway, because again, I like what Jamal say at one point in the post game, is like the difference between the two game winners. One I went right, one I went left. But
that's exactly what he said.
We know there's so much more to that. What was beautiful about that final play was, if Rui would have come over or whatever, Joker was open there too. So you have those two big options. But take us through that play a little bit, Katie.
I just want everyone that, you know, watches Nuggets basketball and really just the NBA in general to appreciate and acknowledge how insane the Nuggets two-man game is. I mean, having a two-man game like Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic, it allows Coach Malone to trust his players and not call timeout in either of those situations, right? They know exactly what they're going to. They know how to handle as the game is winding down and they need a basket. What do they go to? What they go to all the time, what they're most comfortable with, and what's most difficult to defend. So in that game two, they went to the two-man game. Jamal got the shot that he got. In that game five, they went to the two-man game. And like you said, you have so many options out of that, right? Like if Jamal's able to get open, he's a tough shot maker. So you want him to take that shot. If they cover him up, you have Jokic rolling to the basket. That floater is money for him. If you somehow end up covering up both of those guys, then you have, you know, Michael Porter Jr., one of the best shooters in the NBA, around the outside of the three-point line. KCP, also a great three-point shooter, also around the three-point line. And you have Aaron Gordon lurking down low for a potential drop-down pass. So it's like if you take away one thing, you just open up something else. And the Nuggets are so comfortable and so elite in executing that offensive action that it's virtually unstoppable. And it's almost funny because you know they're going to go to that, whether they call a timeout or they don't. That's the action they're trying to get to and let the best two-man game in the business go to work.
Katie Wingy joining us, reporter, host, and analyst for the Nuggets on Altitude TV. Katie, Michael Porter Jr., you mentioned him. For so many reasons, it was special to see him just really shine. I keep saying this. I sound like a broken record, but it felt like he was the glue of this series. And some of those comebacks, right when it felt like L.A. was going to pull away even more, there's a big three-pointer from MPJ. He just kind of kept that steady flow throughout this entire series. And then to add on everything that he's going through with his family, his brothers. And then last year he had an up and down playoffs. He was doing a lot of the little things right, rebounding, playing defense, but the shot wasn't there like we saw in this first series. Talk about just how special he has been so far in these playoffs.
Yeah, he told me he's the most locked in that he's ever been. And I know that's probably a cliche phrase, or when you look at the Nuggets overall, having just won a championship, they're even hungrier to win another one. But I truly think that that is the honest truth with Michael Porter Jr. The way that he came out in this first series, I don't think he was super thrilled with the inconsistencies of the last playoff run, even though it ended in a championship. This season, it's really felt like he's had something to prove. We've seen his offensive game evolve so much. He's attacking closeouts much better now. He's had just some crazy dunks on top of, you know, being the incredible three-point shooter that he is. I asked Nikola Jokic kind of that question of, like, where have you seen Michael Porter Jr.'s growth the most? And first of all, Nikola Jokic said he's one of, if not the best shooter I've ever played with. And he said his offensive evolution, yes, attacking the closeouts, all of that. But Mike is also made for big moments. So now you basically have three players on your team that aren't afraid of big opportunities, aren't afraid of taking big shots, and have the capabilities of making them. You have Jamal Murray, you have Nikola Jokic, and you have Michael Porter Jr. And the Nuggets do not win that series against the Lakers if Michael Porter Jr. doesn't shoot the basketball the way that he did, because everybody else was on a cold streak from the three-point line. Mike not only made big shots when it mattered most, but he was consistent in knocking down shots from deep for Denver, and they're going to need that as they continue to make this run.
No question about it. And going to the Joker side of things, you know, that's when you know he's the MVP. He has triple doubles, he has 30-point nights, he's 26 plus, whatever. And it's not even the story as much as it used to be.
Yeah.
Now it's just kind of like, oh yeah, neat. Good for him. But that's he can fall asleep and get those numbers now.
He averaged a triple double in the Lakers series. Averaged. It was like 9.8 or something like that assists. So if you round up, which I'm going to do, averaged a triple-double. And if you think about what he was playing through in terms of defensive coverages, one, the Lakers threw the kitchen sink at him, so he saw every type of coverage. But I would say the highest percentage of the coverages that he saw were double teams, and he was still able to put up those types of stat lines. Just monster, monster nights. Obviously, the Nuggets play so much through him, and he is the centerpiece. But the way that he is able to read the game, his decision-making, his ability to make everybody around him better and get them great looks, great shots, it becomes background noise because we are so used to it. And I don't want anyone to take it for granted because we're watching one of the greatest players to ever play the game in his prime right now in the Mile High City. And it's so fun to watch him play chess when everybody else is playing checkers and to just figure out how to beat teams while the game is going on. His brain just works so quickly. He is able to find his spots, be in rhythm all the time, and just shows up night in and night out. And now it'll be a different challenge in Minnesota. He's going to have to go up against bigs. He'll see, you know, Rudy Gobert. One of the things that Aaron Gordon told me when I asked him, you know, what can you take from this Lakers series and apply to the Timberwolves series? And I was thinking that his answer is probably going to be like, while the Lakers really challenged us and we know that we're a resilient team, we had every win was a come from behind victory, we know we're not out of any game. But instead, one of the things he mentioned was, well, we saw a lot of cross matching from the Lakers. So you won't see Nikola Jokic's position necessarily guarding him. You'll see Rudy Gobert playing off the ball and coming over to help or double team when Nikola Jokic gets it in the post. So that being able to see that, utilize that, and that's something that the Nuggets saw all season long, but being able to know what to do in those situations, you're going to see Karl Anthony Towns. You're going to see Rudy Gobert. You're going to see Kyle Anderson. They're going to go a little bit smaller on him. So it'll be interesting to see kind of how Nikola Jokic dissects this matchup and takes it to Minnesota.
You're 100% right. I mean, it's fun to watch him do fancy passes and nice shots and put those stats up, but watching his brain almost work, you can almost see it working when he's looking at a defense. Maybe some nights he's taking his time to get involved, whatever. That is one of the more fascinating things about his game. Katie, when you're looking at this matchup coming up, series coming up on Saturday, can you go through, like, obviously switches and everything happen. We know guys are going to end up guarding other guys, whatever. But primarily, who's getting that Anthony Edwards focus on Saturday?
It'll be Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, and I am so excited about that matchup because if you kind of look at the background of those two players, they're both from Georgia. They've known each other for a very long time. KCP knows Anthony Edwards' game. They've grown up kind of playing basketball together. Obviously, KCP is much older than Ant. However, they've had a relationship kind of behind the scenes for a while, and their roots are in the same place. And so there will be tenacity. There will be toughness. There will be just what they would describe as like that Georgia-style basketball going head-to-head. And I think it's a matchup, if you look at kind of what the Nuggets have done in the regular season against the Minnesota Timberwolves. And looking back on it, I haven't really dove in deeply yet. However, I know that both rosters weren't 100% healthy, I don't think, any of the times that they played this season. So, but if you look at just Anthony Edwards' numbers, what was most impressive about the earlier matchups was, I think the last two games against Minnesota, he didn't score in the fourth quarter. And that is obviously a team effort, but Kentavious Caldwell-Pope just putting the clamps on when it matters most. And I think like that is indicative of like, okay, KCP knows his game. He knows what he's trying to get to. He knows how to rattle him a little bit, get under his skin and make him do things that he's not as comfortable doing. And Anthony Edwards is obviously most dangerous in clutch situations. So it's a matchup that I'm very, very, very much looking forward to.
Katie Wingy joining us, Altitude TV. Last couple for you, Katie. Back to the Joker side, just looking at how maybe he will analyze this series coming up against Minnesota. Going back to the Lakers series, they won. They get past it. But why didn't it feel all the way like Nuggets, straight-up Nuggets basketball? There were just so many times where it's like, what is going on here? And then, of course, they make the comebacks, and it's epic. Can you speak on that a bit to us?
Well, the Nuggets aren't going to be able to play the way that they played against Los Angeles, against the Timberwolves, and come out victorious. They're just not. I think that they weren't as connected as they usually are. That could be bumps and bruises. That could be just tired of playing the Lakers and all the narratives surrounding it. And they know they need to be better as well. They understand what it's going to take to beat Minnesota. The turnovers were big against Los Angeles. You cannot fuel. Like, Minnesota is the best defense in the NBA. they're going to turn you over. And so the Nuggets cannot give them easy opportunities by fueling their break and getting stuck playing transition defense. Taking care of the basketball is going to have to be something that they approve upon based on how they showed up against the Lakers. And then the shooting just fell off too. They missed so many wide open threes that were just uncharacteristic misses for this Nuggets team. So there's no rhyme or reason why that happens. It's a make or miss league, and sometimes it's just not your night, but they're going to have to figure it out, and it can't be everybody but Nikola Jokic and Michael Porter Jr. that's not shooting the basketball well. They have to have complementary makers. It would be awesome if the bench could mix in a few more makes as well, but they won't win the series given how good Minnesota's defense is and how deep they are if they don't shoot the basketball better. They're getting the looks that they want. They just have to confidently knock them in.
What's the main difference between Minnesota last year and this year? A lot of the same guys, obviously. Is it just the simple fact that they're together and they got better?
Yes. Part one, yes. I think the experience of playing together, obviously you're cultivating a culture very similarly to what the Nuggets did, you know, through the years. And I don't think it's coincidence that Tim Connelly is now at the helm over there and this is happening in Minnesota, but they're also healthy. Karl-Anthony Towns was not healthy last year. And so Cat being healthy for a good chunk of this season gave them an opportunity to really figure out what the two bigs playing together would look like and how they would be able to complement each other. And I just think the pieces that they've built around Ant and Cat have been so good, and they're very secure, confident, and willing to accept their roles. And again, it mirrors Denver and the way that the Nuggets have found success too. And I think you're seeing that from a league-wide perspective too, a little shift in that. The Oklahoma City Thunder, they're also building from the ground up and have been, and they're finding great success. So it's exciting to see the league kind of change in that way. But when it comes to Minnesota, I really do think it's like experience, health, and then having that culture continue to grow.
Last one for you, Katie. What are you hearing about Timberwolves head coach Chris Finch getting surgery and all that stuff? I don't know how much of an impact that's going to have, what that looks like, but assuming he'll be there on the sidelines, right?
Yeah, I haven't heard anything in terms of surgery or anything like that. I watched it happen, and I'm from Minnesota originally, so I know kind of what Minnesota sports fans have gone through the years in my time of being in Minnesota, and I did think it was very Minnesota sports-esque for them to have their first sweep in franchise history, but in doing so have their coach go down and be added to the injury report. It just was like, how is this possible? What are the odds that this is even a thing? I would imagine nothing would keep him away from being on the sidelines, though, at this point of the season. I tore my ACL. I know his is his patellar. I tore mine way back when. But you do have to do some, like, they call it prehab before you have surgery. So they want to strengthen all the muscles and get you back to as close to normal movement as possible before you do have surgery, because it helps on the other side. So I would imagine that he's going to put off surgery until after the season is done for them and just do what he can. Obviously doesn't have to play, so he can be seated or on a crutch or on a stool or whatever it might be to make sure that he's guiding his team in the way that he wants to. But if I were him, there would be nothing that would keep me from being on the sidelines here.
Yeah, it's going to be so tough for coaches too, because we know how much they like to get up. I was thinking about Michael Malone. He likes to just flat out break down and play defense, you know, on the sides. How tough would that be for a coach?
I don't know Finchie's tendencies, so I don't know if he's going to have to hold back as much as I know Malone. We'll see. He's going to have to get fired up for his guys in a little bit of a different way, that's for sure.
Katie, final one, I promise. I love your follow-up to the horse racing thing with Joker the other night, too. Like, hey, can you think more on it? Give us some more, comparisons to horse racing. And Joker's kind of like, I that's pretty much it. It's, you know, slow start, you know, fast finish.
I know how much he loves talking about horses and horse racing, so anytime I can sneak in a question that even somehow correlates to that, I actually think that I think he wanted to think about it a little bit more,
sure.
But I caught him at a bad time. It was the end of his media. He had just played a really, like, hard, grueling game. he just didn't have the mind power at that point to be like, oh, I'm really going to think this through and answer it thoughtfully, which I completely understand and respect. So at the very least, I got a laugh out of him, and I'll take that.
He'll probably have like a written, you know, three-page report on, actually, there are some more similarities. Here we go.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
Katie, what do you guys have in store for us coming up as far as your coverage, you know, that we can look forward to on Saturday?
Yeah, so unfortunately, with it being the second round, we do lose the game broadcast. They go all national now. However, on Altitude TV, we will have full pregame and full postgame coverage. So if you want to follow the broadcast team that knows the team the best, you can find us on Altitude. It starts an hour before tip-off every game this series. And then we'll have an hour-long postgame show, too. And we're the ones that are, like, in the locker room. You'll get the most in-depth sound and in-depth coverage. I'm going to be personally jumping on the sidelines on the radio, too, now with Jason Kosmitsky.
Love it. Awesome.
Scott Hastings. So if you are listening on the radio or on the app or on the NBA app, whatever it might be, you'll hear me there and you'll hear Kaz and Hastings, and they're a phenomenal duo too. So lots of ways to listen and to watch.
Well, and Katie, we're an affiliate now. So we've got you guys. We're going to have it up here in Northern Colorado. So we'll be hearing you throughout the series. So I know fans will be absolutely thrilled. Katie, appreciate you and all your work that you guys do at Altitude. We love you. We love what you guys do. And we'll look forward to your coverage coming up on Saturday.
Appreciate that. Thanks for having me on.
All right, Katie Wingy, Altitude TV. Well, Altitude Radio a little bit. She's going to be on. She'll be doing a lot of the sideline stuff. So, I just saw, Dixon, I'm sorry. I didn't get to that text. Talking about Joker, not going to him enough. It's over. Maybe Katie would have a better answer. How much, Angel, do you think that the lack of hitting threes just messes everything up offensively? Because when you're hitting threes, you can really get into your offense. And when you're just not hitting, you got defenses playing you differently, daring guys to shoot. They're coming down in the paint more. They're putting more of a focus on Nikola Jokic. I have to think that all kind of works together.
Yeah, and well, as Katie mentioned, there were moments where the Nuggets had those shots. They were good shots. They were open. They just weren't falling. But you also saw an emphasis from the Lakers on their paint defense and trying to stop those little bounce passes that they'll try to do off the pick and roll or the cross court passes that they'll try. So I don't. The Nuggets aren't a huge like 3-point shooting team. That's not their like main focus on offense. But it does help when the shots are falling and you can feel more confident about those kick out passes and getting those assists.
Yeah, no, I think you're 100% right on that. You know, we'll see what they have in the tank coming up this weekend. And like Katie said, you can't screw around. You can't do the comeback thing like this. You can't, you know, just wait to come up with some heroics in the last few minutes of the third or, you know, the last few minutes of the fourth. And again, I know it wasn't the last few minutes of the fourth. It was a lot of the fourth. So we'll see 42 minutes after the hour. Angel, I got a jam-packed show still today. We got some not-so-great news coming out of the University of Northern Colorado on the wrestling side of things. Let's get to the good, the bad, the ugly next. We'll get to the bottom of the hour first, and we'll get the latest on the local sports flash.
This KFKA podcast is presented by Bank of Colorado. There's only one Colorado and one community like Greeley, the place we've called home for years. Family-owned, community-focused banking, Bank of Colorado. There's only one. Member FDIC.